The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on this Monday morning. So glad you are with me. Of course, the biggest news of the day, the Cleveland Browns routed the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean routed, destroyed them. Sorry, Bengals fans, it's over. The Browns are here and Baker's to stay. There was a lot of controversy in Cleveland last week. Unless you're a football fan, you wouldn't know this, but OBJ, Odell Beckham Jr., great talent. Wanted out of Cleveland, so they're letting him go. No drama. Kevin Stefanski, no drama. Andrew Berry, no drama. Jimmy Haslam worked it out, let him go, and the Browns rolled. I mean, they rolled. And then Baker Mayfield showed up. I know this is a news show, but once in a while you hear a great American sports figure. Unlike a lot of the pampered athletes who are always talking about me, 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 you get a Baker Mayfield comes up to the microphone after a must-win game in which all eyes are on him because OBJ said he's a terrible quarterback. In essence, his dad did. OBJ's dad. Baker takes the microphone and says this, cut number 18.
I trust the guys in this locker room. I've said it over and over again, and I truly mean it. So when adversity hits, nobody flinched. It was a long week. I'd be lying if I said otherwise, but proud of these guys and you know how they were able to focus and do their jobs. It's just, we got a good group. We really do.
When you say nobody flinched, where does that come from? Who sets that tone?
All of our guys. You know, we got a bunch of good leaders. We have a good locker room, guys that know the task at hand, what we need to do and what we need to accomplish to win games, how to focus up and how to play for each other. And you saw that come out today. It's pretty simple. I'm not going to overthink it. You know, our guys were together just like they have been, and we played for each other. Defense played great. Special teams great. You know, we got to capitalize in the red zone. That continues to be a thing that we need to get better at. So everybody, once Sunday comes around, knows exactly what we need to do. And today was the first day that I felt like we did a great team win, a complimentary football. You know, we can be a little bit more complimentary on the offense side of the ball, taking advantage of those turnovers. But for the most part, it was a great win. Donovan's been a guy that we can rely on and continue to count on, as you can see with his two very, very critical catches in this game. You know, they're in quarters defense, safety cut, David coming across the middle. And, you know, obviously David's going to bring a lot of attention when he's running across the middle. So just put it up there for Donovan, made a play, and he finished it. So great job by him. I came here to win. I've said it over and over again. That's why I was brought here, to change the culture. Help change the culture and continue to contribute, you know, towards that winning attitude. And, you know, our guys are bought in. They focused up and did their job, and that needs to be a week-to-week thing.
What is it about your back against the wall, people doubting you, that it's so good to go?
I'd say this is a pretty unique situation, to be honest with you. This wasn't anything that I've had before. But it's the type of sick, twisted mindset that, you know, I've idolized guys like Kobe and Mike Tyson, people that when they have their back against the wall, the best comes out and you see what somebody's made of. And mentally, you got to, you know, find out how to do that every week. And it's just a part of the process.
He's a kid. What is he, 23, 24, 25? I just like his attitude. It's a terrific attitude. Meanwhile, the Cavaliers beat the New York Knicks. I want my New York people to understand that Ricky Rubio hit 37. Evan Mobley was the best player in the draft. The Cavs picked him third. He's a superstar. He's Chris Bosh, come again. And the Cavs are back. So everything is great. Ohio State wins. I'm a happy guy. I'm going to Oklahoma City today. And it makes me happier, too, talking to the Christian Employers Association this evening. So I will not be with you tomorrow. Our friend Bruce Hooley from Columbus will be sitting in for me. But I'm here to tell you, this is a great week to be an American because the Browns won and the Cavs won. And the Guardians look pretty good. Tito's coming back next year, and the Cavs are all of a sudden a great basketball team. So what? Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers has attacked the NFL and the woke mob of critics who are attacking him because of his unvaccinated status. He went on Pat McAfee's radio show and lashed out for a couple of hours at critics after he tested positive for COVID-19. He lambasted the establishment's pandemic analysis and labeled himself a critical thinker. Rogers said his decision, according to the Wall Street Journal, not to receive one of the three vaccines approved in the U.S. was based on extensive research about what was best for his body. He claimed that he was allergic to the two mRNA vaccines from Pfizer and Moderna, did not trust the one-shot vaccine from Johnson & Johnson. He did not specify his allergy. I made a choice that was in my best interest, Aaron Rodgers said. He added, the right's going to champion me and the left is going to cancel me. And the whole time, I don't give a beep about either of them. Politics is a total sham. So he's very much endearing himself to the entire world this morning. He played good football. Look, athletes are about playing football and about attitude. That's why I like Baker. Why some people used to like Aaron Rodgers, but he obviously doesn't care for them. So, or for his teammates. Further affiant saith not. What's the major story of the day, the biggest story of the day? It's actually happening in Beijing, where Xi Jinping has summoned hundreds of senior Chinese Communist Party officials to pass a resolution that makes him the equivalent of Mao and Deng Xiaoping. He's not power mad at all. That is in the Financial Times. Xi laying his groundwork for a third term by adopting Mao and Deng's power ploy resolution. To steer China's future, Xi is rewriting its past, according to the New York Times. Then we go into the other vaccine world. In the Telegraph of Great Britain this morning, boosters, according to the leading public health authority, they're boosters. Professor James Naismith of the Rosalind Franklin Institute and a biologist at Oxford University believes Britain is over the worst of COVID, and he believes that with the boosters, COVID will fade into the background, which is exactly what I hope Glenn Youngkin assures happens in Virginia. I have a new column this morning over at thewashingtonpost.com. Entitled, Glenn Youngkin Must Move Boldly and Swiftly on Education. It recommends hiring someone in the mold of Bill Bennett, as President Reagan did in 1985. Turn him loose, allow him to pick his own superintendent. So Virginia has a Secretary of Education. They have a Superintendent of Education. Glenn Youngkin appoints them both. Pick a secretary, let the secretary pick his deputy, the superintendent. Go about getting the mess that is Virginia Public Schools fixed. One set of rules about quarantine, one set of rules about boosters, one set of rules about never shutting down again ever, and go find the kids that are lost. On Friday, the bipartisan infrastructure bill passed. It was a $500 billion in new spending and $500 trillion left over from COVID relief passed by Mitch McConnell last year. Please understand, Joe Biden wants to say it's a big win for him. It's a bipartisan win. I would have voted for it in the United States Senate. Rob Portman led the negotiations. Mitch McConnell voted for it. We need roads and highways, especially the port money, because we got to get serious about China here. So it's a $500 trillion. It's not as big as Obama's stimulus bill was, and that disappoints Joe. And it's not as big as McConnell's COVID relief was, and that disappoints Joe. Joe wants so much to be the biggest and the best in everything. But he does. He's made quite a splash in Great Britain. Made quite a splash in Great Britain. Can we play Susan Reed and Richard Moody from ITV's Good Morning Britain? Cut number 16, please.
First of all, I need to tell you, Susanna, I'm a yoga teacher now.
Yes.
And I positively encourage it in my classes. And, you know, I'm quite, open to letting off myself. And when I do, I say, oh, my goodness, here we are. And in fact, there's a wind-relieving pose called apanasana. But apart from that, let's face it.
Apanasana?
Yes, that's right.
Which position is that, Aggie?
Susanna's going to demonstrate.
No, I'm not going to demonstrate.
You lie on your back and you hug both knees in and you interlace your fingers.
So you can see what they're talking about in Great Britain. Apparently, President Biden broke wind with Camilla Bowles and the Duchess can't stop talking about it. And now it's all over and for quite an extended period, it was a record breaker. And so Great Britain, their morning TV, they can't get away from this. This is all they're talking about in Great Britain, is the president of the United States joining with the 5-year-old boys of America in celebrating long expulsions of the body's inner workings. That was really the headline in Great Britain all week long. I'm not making it up. Not making up. $500 trillion in new spending, $500 trillion in old spending. They call it a victory, and the President of the United States is on the front page of every newspaper in Great Britain for one thing and one thing only. And it's not the global emissions. It's a different kind of emission. I'll be right back, America, on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined on the Inza Report by Selena Zito, columnist for the Washington Examiner, writer for the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal. She has nailed it again with a new column in the Washington Examiner titled "The Voters Revolt Against Our Cultural Curators Again," the key paragraph of which reads, "Biden and the Democrats have been caught once again failing to appreciate why they were sent to Washington, D.C. They underestimated just how toxic their intersection with the cultural curators would be for them, with those constantly telling voters they are insurrectionists and racists and lying about voting laws in Georgia and Texas and Pennsylvania, or smearing them because they don't want idiotic ideas driven into their children's skull. On Tuesday, these voters gave Democrats a piece of their mind, not just here in Pennsylvania, but also in Virginia, New Jersey, and nationwide." Correcto mundo, Selena Zito. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Sunshine. I'm great. How are you?
Great, great column. What happened in Pennsylvania? I know what happened in Virginia. It's where I live, and the Democrats got blown out big time in New Jersey. A lot of them got blown out, and the governor barely survived. What happened in PA?
Oh, well, it was fascinating. So I'm going to focus initially first on the race that I covered several times, and that's the one for Erie County Executive. The county executive position, that's a countywide elected position, has only been in existence since the 1970s. Since then, Republican has only won it twice. And as you know, and as probably your listeners know, Erie County is a very important county in a statewide elected race. It's almost always gone for the Democrats. Donald Trump was the exception in 2016. It went back to Biden, albeit narrowly, in 2020. And a Republican won that countywide race, running a very sort of boring race, much similar to Youngkin on very local issues. And he won it against a candidate who was the transgender school board president who ran on national issues. And you know, they kept the public schools closed in Erie for a very long time. So that was a big problem for the Democrats.
Was it close, Selena, or was it a blowout?
I don't know what the final numbers were, but it was much broader than anybody would have even expected if the Republican had won. It was more than Donald Trump won it in 2016.
Oh, wow. So Erie is moving back red. And by the way, Erie, home of Camp Notre Dame, near and dear to my heart. It occasionally, what does it prefigure in the 2022 elections in the Keystone State, Selena, if anything?
Oh, it's very important. We have two big statewide elections here. We have governor's race and we have the U.S. Senate race. And there will also be part of the congressional balance of power in our delegation. But statewide was really interesting as well, although I saw this coming because I had been covering it. Republicans swept. I mean, they had great wins in Pennsylvania all Tuesday night. The count isn't finished, but they're close to having a complete sweep in all the judicial races. They may lose one. There's one that's very close. But even so, they had a great night with all the judicial races.
Did they win the Supreme Court seat? Because the Supreme Court is actually, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is responsible for all the nightmare of 2020. And it began in 2019 when they threw out congressional. I mean, they are just a crazy court. So did they rebuke that court with the election?
Yes, they absolutely did. And down ballot, there were seats, not just in Western Pennsylvania, which has been trending conservative for at least a decade, but also in the collar counties around Philadelphia, in Bucks County in particular, where you saw seats for sheriff, seats for county council, and DA, seats, those kinds of races, those down ballot races that really tell you how a community feels about the party in power, started going back to conservatives. Now, they didn't have a sweep. They didn't have a sweep, but they certainly have moved the needle back to Republicans. And this and the rest of the state just continued to become more and more conservative.
Well, Selena, I do not know much about the governor's race. I know Josh Shapiro, the Democrat's very talented attorney general. But what about the Senate race? One of the candidates had a crash and burn last week. Who is the front runner in to replace Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania?
It is still Sean Parnell. Today he has his day in court where he is able to rebut what his what was said last week by his wife, which has sort of upended his life, at least, or his race and his life. But I think today we will see probably a different story come out of that courthouse. There's also Carla Sands, who was an ambassador in the Trump administration. She's originally from Mechanicsburg, I believe, somewhere around Harrisburg. So, yeah, there's several other people in that race as well.
Selena Zito, always good to talk to you. Great column this morning, The Voters Revolt Against Our Cultural Curators. Again, the ruling class took it on the chin. Now, they're not really the ruling class. They just think they are, and they took it on the chin because of the work of people like Selena Zito. Sign up for all things Selena at selenazito.com. Come back hour two. Byron York leads us off. Stay tuned, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95.
The Beltway on this Monday morning after a Tuesday wipeout of Democrats. They kind of bumped heads together over the weekend, and they've come up with no plan. I'm joined by Jake Sherman. He is the editor of Punch Bowl News, and you ought to be getting your punchbowlnews.com. The reason I'm always informed is I read Punch Bowl News every morning, and so I know what's ahead. Good morning, Jake. How are you?
I'm well, Hugh. How are you?
Good. So the bipartisan infrastructure bill passed last week. I would have voted for it. I would have been with one of the 17 Republicans in the Senate who voted for it in the House Republicans. $500 billion in new spending, $500 billion in repurposed. That's not really the big deal. The big deal is BBB. Build back better. Where is it? Is it dead yet?
I don't think it's dead. I'll go over quickly where I think it is. I mean, so the moderates and the progressives cut a deal to allow those two votes to happen, the infrastructure vote and the so-called rule vote, which is a procedural vote on the larger package. They cut a deal to vote for this large package next week. Now, a few dynamics to keep in mind. Number one, what the House passes will never become law. Number two, we don't know if we're going to have the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office analysis of the larger bill by next week. So I'm not entirely sure this scheme is going to work, but I do think I was just telling Dwayne, your associate this morning, I do think that some version of this bill will pass at some point in time. I just think that it won't happen, obviously not before Thanksgiving, but if it happens by the end of the year, by December 31st, then I think that is a victory for them.
Now, look, if they get anything out of the Senate that Joe Manchin signs on to, it will be a victory. I will be the first to admit that. But we are mightily removed from the $7 trillion Green New Deal that we began with, that became a $3.5 trillion Green New Deal and family leave, which is now down to $1.75 trillion if Joe Manchin agrees and the House can agree. And we're not even sure they can, and it's not out of the House yet. It's the incredible shrinking FDR. At what point do the Democrats realize that continuing down this path is going to get them more Virginias, more New Jerseys, and as Selena Zito just told me, a wipeout at the local level in Pennsylvania?
Well, that's a big question. Let me actually answer that in a different way, but I hope an illuminating way. There's two theories about power in my estimation, Hugh, and there's the get power and retain it, and get power and use it. And I typically think those two are in conflict with each other. I think Pelosi's view, and I don't know this to be sure, but if I were reading Pelosi or I were reading the Democratic leadership, they in their last two stints in the first 2 years of an administration, that would be 09 to, you know, the end of 2010. And right now they went big. And you might not like it if you're a Republican or a conservative, or many, some Democrats might not like it, but they did, and they lost the House both times. So, or they're not going to lose, they haven't lost the House this time, but you assume based on the numbers that they're going to lose the House. So that's the kind of the vibe that they have, right? That they feel like they need to go big. They're likely to lose the House, and you might as well just go big if you can.
Now, Newt Gingrich was on with Judge Jeanine yesterday, and I want you to hear what he had to say, Jake, and get your comment.
I think Kevin McCarthy's on the right track. Last year, he had his commitment to America. He went out and he recruited new candidates with a very broad diversity in terms of ethnic. I think everybody who won, who picked up seats last year, was either a woman or a minority or both. And Kevin was supposed to lose 25 seats. He gained 15. That's a swing of 40.
Yeah.
So he's in much stronger shape right now to become Speaker. My personal guess is, having lived through this with Reagan, with the Contract with America, and with John Boehner in 2010, my guess is they're going to pick up between 40 and 70 seats in the House and at least four seats in the Senate. And the Democrats are still going to be sitting there. I mean, look what they're doing. I mean, Pelosi, after they lost in 2009, turned right around 4 days later and tried and passed Obamacare, saying publicly, you have to vote for it to find out what's in it. Mm-hmm. She's back at the same stand doing the same junk. And people are not going to vote for a Pelosi dictatorship.
Well,
so I think you're going to find between Biden's collapse and Pelosi's attitude, the Democrats are, in a sense, repudiating the country.
So I don't expect you to agree with Newt Gingrich, Jake, but that is what Republicans feel right now, is that they're on the way towards a big win in 2022. Do Democrats share that worry?
Yes, they share that worry. That was the most Newtian clip I've ever heard of Newt. It was a very Newtian clip, and a lot of people will know what I mean. Listen, I don't think they're going to win 70 seats. McCarthy said last week that they could win more than they won in 2010, which was 63. That's tough. I mean, I'm not suggesting one way or the other whether it will happen or not, but that's really difficult to win that many seats. And I think the Democrats and Republicans both feel as if Republicans are in good shape. I don't think you could deny that. I think that would just be denying history, denying facts. I mean, the data shows that Republicans have a good chance. But Democrats, of course, are worried about it. And there are some in the caucus. And I spoke to Jerry Connolly, who I think represents, I don't think, but represents Northern Virginia. I don't know if that's where he represents. I don't know if he's your congressman, Hugh, but
he's not.
Yeah. So he represents a pretty liberal district right now, that he will win. And it used to be a Republican district before the maps were drawn and before kind of things changed in Northern Virginia. But he told us last week that Democrats should be in DEFCON 2, and they're not in DEFCON 2 at all. So it's interesting to hear somebody like him say something like that.
I read that in your column, Jake, and I immediately thought, what's going on here is an attempt to push Democrats into retirement. Newt and McCarthy and everybody else is out there talking 40, 60, 70 seats. I think it'll be like 25. But they're trying to push Democrats into retirement because nobody wants to lose and go looking for a job. Am I not right? Right now, you got a lot of Democrats who've been around for 15 to 20 years saying, I don't want to get wiped out in a red wave. I want to go find a job now.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I think that I agree with you that it's probably closer to 20 or 30 than it is to 70. I'd say that's for sure.
And if it isn't, great. But, you know, given the margin that exists, that the Republicans won a lot of House seats last year, and they're going to win more House seats. But there's just an upper limit. You can't get to 400 House seats anymore. That's not the way redistricting works. When Illinois does a gerrymander that is, I mean, it's a thing of beauty. It's the most ruthless gerrymander I've ever seen in Illinois, and the Democrats did it, and I salute them. Right? That's what partisan gerrymandering does.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that is what it does, and I think, but listen, I will say this: analysts do tell us, people who watch this stuff more than as well as you do, more definitely more than I do, that Republicans are not going to get
get the seats that they wanted as part of redistricting. Sorry, my son is getting dressed, so I'm.
It's great. I love it. You know, you and Drucker and everybody. When you have small kids and they're on, I'm all for it because it's authenticity. I think the Republicans, according to Cook Political Report, are supposed to be up about 2.5 seats institutionally now. That's
but
it.
By the way, Hugh, that was believed to be like 10 or 12 a couple months ago.
Right.
And that doesn't matter. I mean, there are still a lot of soft Democratic seats like Sharice Davids in Kansas. And there are just a lot of seats that they believe they could win back. Stephanie Bice in Oklahoma. Or is that the Democrat? Whoever the Democrat is in Oklahoma. So there are a lot of seats that they believe they can win.
And just a red wave. So let me go back and close this way. If you're a Nancy Pelosi and you're retiring, all you want to do is get a nugget. She's proud of the 2009 healthcare vote, the 2010 healthcare vote. She will take everyone out with her. She's going to force this through. The question is, what happens to it in the Senate, Jake?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think she's going to pass this bill. The Senate's going to mess around with it for a little bit. And I mean that not in a bad way, but they have to do a lot of tinkering. I mean, Joe Manchin basically said, I don't care what they pass. Like, I'm not even looking at it. When it gets over here, we'll do what we need to do.
And that means cut and paste to the extent. And Joe Manchin cares about the CBO score a lot, doesn't he?
Big time. Oh, big time, big time. And he doesn't agree with the, as we know now, the expansion of Medicare. He's against that. And he says he doesn't even want to do expansion of hearing in Medicare. Bernie says hearing isn't enough. He wants hearing, dental, and vision. If you're someone like Bernie Sanders, you have all Democratic control in Washington for the first time in more than a decade, and you're not getting what you want. That is tough for a lot of progressives to swallow.
It's going to be great fun for the Republicans to watch. We don't have to do anything. When your opponents are busy killing each other, stand back and let them slice at each other. And that's what's going on among the Democrats. They'll get something in the end. It just won't be much. And you ought to get punchbowlnews.com. Go sign up, because every morning I know what's going to happen in D.C. that day and most of the week because I get punchbowlnews.com. Thank you, Jake Sherman. 1-800-520-1234. The Browns win. The Cavs win. The Republicans win. Ohio State wins. What more could you want, America? Give me a call. 1-800-520-1234. Come, let us gather together and celebrate on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I was expecting Charlie Dombeck of Key City Capital this morning, but he did not show. However, I want you to go to keycitycapital.com/Hugh. Great sponsor of this program. I usually like talking to Charlie as inflation looms because if people don't recalculate how they invest, they're going to get wiped out. And you can visit Charlie at keycitycapital.com/Hugh. I have in my hand the lead story in the Washington Post this morning. It's got to be 5,000 words. Country's climate pledges built on flawed data. Post-investigation finds. It turns out that all of the information that has been floating around Glasgow at the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change is all wrong. It's all made up. The analysis done by the Post finds that all of it has been built on a data set from emission figures countries report to the United Nations. They are missing years of data, so reporters used a statistical model to estimate the emissions from each country, and that analysis found that at least 59% gap exists between how countries account for emissions and the emissions that they actually produce. In other words, that's just the carbon absorption that they say is occurring is not happening. And methane emissions are not accurately tallied. Nothing is actually accurately tallied. How could you expect the United Nations to come out any other way? But go and read it. Countries' climate pledges built on flawed data. In other words, all that stuff in Glasgow that they took all the cars there and they all flew over in their private jets to Glasgow, it didn't actually have a data set. Sounds like a left-wing program, doesn't it? We'll make it up. Al in Sarasota, Florida. Good morning, Al.
Hello.
Hello, Al. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the economy, Biden wealth blessing, the fact that household net worth in America is at an all-time high, corporate profits are at an all-time high, and talk radio seems to have their listeners on a steady IV drip of rage and resentment and misinformation.
Keep going, Al. Tell me more.
What would you like to know?
Well, I don't know. You called me. You got some talking points there. Let's run through them, and then you can check it off, and you've done your job for the Democrats today.
No, there's no talking points. I'm not a Democrat. I'm a conservative type person.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a combat decorated veteran.
Yeah, thank you for your service.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where was that? Were you Vietnam? Were you Vietnam?
Vietnam in 68-69, 1st Infantry Division.
Thank you.
MOS 11 Boogaloo.
Great. Great to have you on, and I appreciate your service. It's Veterans Week. I was talking earlier today about a wonderful tribute to veterans at the church I attended yesterday. I hope you get one, too. But your IV drip of rage and resentment, that's kind of a talking point, Al.
That's just the way I feel. I have free time. I run a little private equity money, so I listen to the radio. And
that's
I'm
good.
Amused by
I'm glad you do. I'm glad you call. What part of my show do you like the most?
The silliness, the funniness, the sports part.
Are you from Boston?
I am.
I knew it. I knew. Are you a Patriots fan?
Boston Patriots, 1960, American Football League.
Yeah, I kind of figured you were. So you have been wrong your entire life, basically.
How is that?
Well, you're from Massachusetts. You root for the Patriots. You left the state. You moved to the free state of Florida to save taxes. And you still don't know that conservatives are what make life worth living in America.
You're a semi-gifted polemicist.
When we get that, please, a semi-gifted polemicist. Hey, Al, you have a good day, man. Thanks for your service. It's Veterans Week. I'm not going to give you a hard time. When somebody gives me their MOS, they're not lying. Semi-gifted polemicist. Semi-gifted polemicist. Okay, John Ratcliffe was on yesterday with
Hugh
Maria
Hewitt, semi-gifted.
Well, I'm going to have to save that for the next segment now because I'm a semi-gifted polemicist. Did you like him, Dwayne? Did you think he was pretty cool?
No, he's from Boston. I don't like anybody from Boston.
Oh, neither do I, but he's moved to Florida and he got Ivy Rage. I mean, it's like he wrote it down beforehand and he got it out. Always let them through, Ben. Always let them through. We love seminar callers. They are the spice of life. They are the joy of my day. They are the sunshine in the morning. It's after a Browns win and a Cavaliers win and a Buckeyes win, and particularly beating up on the poor Bungles in Cincinnati. I'm in a great mood. Let all the seminar callers through. 1-800-520-1234. Rachel, call if you want to. Joy, give me a buzz. I'm in such a good mood. Nobody can bother me. Doesn't matter what you say. 1-800-520-1234. Connects you to this, the Hugh Hewitt Show. During the break, go and download the Salem News Channel app. Next hour, Josh Krasauer and others. Stay tuned, America. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway on this Monday morning. It's been a great weekend for Ohioans. The Buckeyes won, the Browns won, the Cavs won, and so it's better to start with the Buckeye, Bernie Marino, of course, running for the United States Senate in Ohio. Good morning, Bernie. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Good morning, Hugh, and happy Browns Day.
I know. It was a pretty good day yesterday. You're running for Senate, so you need Cincinnati votes, so I guess you can't really tap dance on the head of the Bengals fans like I can.
No, you know what? I think voters appreciate that you at least take a stand, and I'm a Browns fan.
Yeah. Bernie, what did you I want to remind everyone, we have six great candidates running for Senate in Ohio. I'm starting my second round through them. Bernie was at the debate in Columbus 2 weeks ago. Bernie, what'd you make of the debate? I didn't get a chance to talk to you afterwards. I talked to your daughter. She's terrific. But what'd you think?
It was amazing. It was a substantive forum on topics that matter to voters. You know, voters, as you know, are hungry for change, and they want to talk about real issues. 1,500 paid voters on a rainy Sunday night. I mean, think about that. We talked about all the issues that matter. There was no gotcha questions that you'd get from legacy media. So you did a great job.
Well, I know I was happy with it, but 1,500 people bought tickets. That's a demand signal in your business, right? You know, demand signals. That means people want more of the serious stuff. And I think media is failing them. I thought the coverage afterwards divided into accurate and agenda-driven journalism. What did you think?
I think it was mostly agenda-driven journalism. I think if you read the press reports and weren't there, it's really two alternate universes. At the end of the day, the people that were there were there to interview the person who they want to represent them in Washington, D.C. And I think the questions you asked really got to that place. So I was very, very happy with it. I think the audience was very engaged, and it was fantastic. Look forward
now,
to it.
Now, after we met on a Sunday night, Virginia, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and other places, including Ohio, voted. How do you read the election last week, Bernie Moreno, as you look forward to your primary in May, and hopefully you want to be the general election candidate in November?
Well, I think your article that you wrote after the forum was right spot on. I think there are three categories of candidates in the Ohio Senate race. I would have framed them a little bit differently. I think there's the political insiders, the political celebrities. And I think what Virginia showed is what voters want is the outsider job creators. And that's me. I'm somebody who's fought to get everywhere I've gotten in my life. I'm a job creator. I know how to get things done, whether it's tackling inflation or getting people back to work, stopping illegal immigration. I know what we need to do.
You know, that's an interesting take. Glenn Youngkin does come from outside of government. He is a private sector guy. He's like Mike Braun, like Ron Johnson, like Bernie Moreno and Mike Gibbon, I pointed out, you're both business people. How does that translate on the trail? And especially since you were actually the most aggressive on the border of the six candidates. You were talking about the fact that they aren't staying in hotels at the border. They're going, those being the people entering the country without permission, all over the country.
Yeah, my wife and I went there, visited about a month and a half ago, and that's peak summer season, as you know. And right now, as the temperatures start to cool in terms of crossing from Colombia, where, as you know, I was born, up to the border, these people are going to come in dramatically larger numbers. And I don't think what a lot of people in America realize is once they're processed by Border Patrol and released into the country, they have almost a pseudo legal status because they have to reappear at their court hearing, which may not be for years. So during that period of time, they can get a driver's license. They're eligible for SNAP benefits. They're eligible for unemployment. They can get a job. They can do all the things that basically a legal immigrant can do, which is why they're coming in such gigantic numbers, because the door has been flung wide open by Joe Biden.
Now, one of the memorable moments of the debate in Ohio is when you said, I'm the only immigrant on the stage. Did you save that question for me? And I did. I actually went to you last on it because you are a legal immigrant. Would you tell the audience your story? How'd you end up in the United States?
Yeah, I was born in Colombia, South America. My mom and dad saw what was coming down there, and they wanted us to grow up in a country that you're only limited by your dreams and potential. And so we learned English, and we became part of American fabric. We became an American citizen. I've told you the story here that my mom made me read everything about the Declaration of Independence and the Federalist Papers and the Constitution. And man, do I wish Joe Biden's mom had done the same thing for him.
Well, then we wouldn't have a vaccine mandate, because it simply is not within the authority of the federal government to order up, much less the president do so unilaterally. Bernie Moreno, in terms of Cleveland State, I got, when I did my reading, you are active at Cleveland State. That's one of those educational institutions that very few people outside of a region know about. Why are you so involved at Cleveland State? What are you doing there?
Because this is one of those universities that really makes things happen for people who otherwise would not have an opportunity to the American dream. Most of our students are first-generation college students. And we're not there about creating woke culture or woke ideology. We're there to help them get a job. So I put in $1 million and created a sales center. We're going to have the preeminent sales center in America. We made certain that people who came from our local community college could transfer all their credits seamlessly into CSU. And most importantly, we made a strong statement about free speech on campus. And I'm very proud that the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, we're the only institution to get the highest rating. So there's some good news stories in universities, and Cleveland State is one of them.
What is the sales center, Bernie Marino?
So we saw that a lot of these kids want is they want an opportunity to make good money, have a great shot at the American dream. And nothing is better at that than sales. So what we teach kids is persuasion, the science of persuasion, how to channel that grit and determination into a career that can pay them meaningful amounts of money. So we started with 4 students here, and next semester we'll have over 500 kids enrolled and getting some sort of sales certificate or eventually sales degree.
Bernie Marino, congratulations on that. I remember a general manager of my Sacramento affiliate 2 decades ago saying, nothing happens until somebody sells something. And I've never exactly forgotten that. That's actually the whole genius of capitalism is demand signals. Nothing happens until somebody sells something.
That's my whole business case for this Senate race. Do you want more lawyers down there, or do you want somebody who knows how to persuade and sell? And that's, you know, as you know, when there's a tough business deal, what nobody ever says is, let's bring in another lawyer to make the deal happen. They bring in the sales guy. That's me.
Look, I'm a lawyer. I want to defend our turf a little bit, but I'm retired. Bernie Marino, so now we're into a 6-month period where people have to be on TV. I can't believe how early the Ohio Senate race has begun on TV. Are you up on TV?
No, I'm going to spend my donors' money with enormous respect, the way we should treat taxpayer dollars. So we won't go on there until a little bit later when people are really paying attention and when it really is meaningful. Because, again, I'm not going to waste the donor money to just artificially make me feel better that I'm advancing in the race.
Okay, and now tell me a little bit about whether or not the education issue in Ohio resonates the way it did in Virginia. I think Ohio is actually doing better than Virginia on charter schools and reopening.
Well, you know, sad to report that in Cleveland, Ohio was the first state to close schools. In Cleveland, the charter school that my wife and I were involved in closed for 18 months.
Oh my gosh.
We resigned from the board as a result of that because these are kids that couldn't afford to be out of school for 18 days, let alone 18 months. So I think we have a lot of work to do in Ohio. But as you know, I'm running for the United States Senate, and we can do limited things there, mostly around defunding the Department of Education and moving that money to local authority, which is where it belongs. But certainly as a voter in Ohio, somebody pays property taxes, we got to do a lot better job and create better opportunities for kids in Ohio.
Now, the infrastructure bill passed. Whether or not you supported it, I supported it. I don't remember what your answer is. I don't think you did, but it doesn't matter. It's now law. What would you want Ohio's infrastructure money to go to, Bernie Marino?
Well, so just to be clear, I supported infrastructure, but what I thought we should do, which is nuanced, of course, which means it doesn't get any coverage, is that I thought we should use the American Rescue Plan money that has not been spent by cities, counties, and states, and use that money for infrastructure and not spend another $1.2 trillion. But the most important project we have in the state, of course, is the bridge between Cincinnati and Kentucky. I owned a dealership there. I know the impact that that bridge has. So let's get that bridge done and fixed finally. But, of course, I'm concerned that that $1.2 trillion is going to add to the deficit. And, of course, it has a lot of boondoggle programs in there, like is typical of all these bills.
You know, Bernie Marino, when my son was at Miami of Ohio, I had to fly into Kentucky and drive to Cincinnati. I hated that bridge. Is that still not fixed?
Oh, it's worse than it was when you were there. They had a fire in the bridge, and so they've been repairing that. It has a lot of Band-Aids. It's never been solved. This is what I talk about when you say, do you need more lawyers? Do you need more salespeople? That bridge should have been fixed a decade or more ago. It didn't require any supplemental to get that done. This is just inaction from career politicians that has caused that.
You know, Pete Wilson got the 10 rebuilt in 5 months or 6 months, and that means the bridge could have been done the same way. Bernie Marino, great to have you. Keep coming back. It's going to be one of the most interesting Senate races of my 21 years on the radio and 30 years in the media. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. I'll be right back. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is. And uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, Inside the Beltway, live on a Monday morning. I hope you have downloaded the Salem News Channel app as we change America's face of news. I'm joined by Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. Good Monday morning, Senator. Thanks for joining me again.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to be back on with you as always.
How do you read last week's election results in Virginia, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and other places where there were races on the ballot?
Just a small and bitter foretaste for the Democratic Party of what is to come a year from today.
How do you extrapolate from that? What do you think will be the issues that will drive 2022?
Well, I think that the issues that drove these elections will continue to drive the elections next year. The kind of common sense kitchen table concerns that so many Americans have that the Democratic Party either refuses to acknowledge or actively rejects. So concern about a rising wave of crime across our communities or chaos at our southern border, to prioritizing illegal aliens to the point where Joe Biden is now openly acknowledging that we're going to pay reparations to them, or education at a time when schools are still going to remote learning intermittently, requiring kids to wear masks, shutting down gifted and talented and AP courses, and indoctrinating our kids to hate America, and the rising cost of everything in America, Hugh. Anyone who has to pay for groceries at the store or gas at the pump, or who's worried about being able to get Christmas gifts in time for their kids and to pay for them that can get them, the Democratic Party consistently rejects these concerns, says they're not valid, or if you are worried about them, you're somehow racist.
It's not
going to be a formula for victory next year.
It's not just the Democratic Party, though, Senator. I think there's actually a de facto ruling class, self-anointed, not really in power, but acting like it is. And I think the vote last week was a rebuke to people who want to tell us how to live our lives, and especially who want to tell parents to stay out of schools where their children are. I can't read it any other way than a rebuke to the idea that there are two classes of citizens in America.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that, Hugh. Just look at the way CNN and MSNBC and the Sunday morning news show, the New York Times, the Washington Post, all have responded to schools in Virginia run by far left school boards and superintendents trying to indoctrinate kids to hate our country, to see everything through the lens of race, to separate kids by race, to close down gifted and talented programs and AP programs because they don't believe the kids have the right racial mixture, that there's too many Asian kids in those programs. The response to all of those on the far left and even the Democratic Party is that this is not taught in schools. Or to be exact here, it reminds me of the old joke about the lawyer scoundrel who uses arguments in the alternative that are inherently contradictory. He's not my dog. He didn't bite you. You kicked him first.
Yep.
Well, the Democratic left's response to critical race theory is critical race theory doesn't exist. It's not taught in our schools. You're racist for wanting to take it out of our schools.
That's very good. I'm going to steal that, Senator, because I it's not my dog. It didn't bite you. Besides, you kicked it first is indeed an old chestnut. But that is the first time I've heard it applied to CRT. You know, I find it interesting, Senator, that the response everywhere is CRT isn't taught in our schools. I explained, I went to Catholic schools for 12 years. There was a religion class every day, but the idea of a Catholic school is that it infused the entire school. a CRT school doesn't have to have CRT 101 to be a CRT school. It just has to impose a racial construct on everything. And I think it's increasingly difficult to argue that that's not in the water.
Yeah, so Hugh, I think that's a good analogy. I doubt that as many Catholic preschools and kindergartens are in America, they are teaching the doctrine of transubstantiation or trying to assign St. Augustine's City of God.
They're not.
St. Thomas Aquinas' Summa Theologica. They are, however, teaching those kids the basic principles behind Catholic doctrine, such that Jesus is God's Son, and he's the Savior that was sent to redeem us of our sins. And we should ask God and Jesus for his forgiveness, and that Jesus wants us to love one another as he loved all of us. They are teaching those principles. And yes, while they may not be assigning law school textbooks in kindergarten, they are teaching the essential principles of the odious doctrine of critical race theory, that race is the most important thing about you, that the color of your skin determines what you can achieve in this country, that some people are inherently oppressive, some people are inherently victims. And
you know,
I would take it a step farther. It is pretty rich for people like Henry Rogers, a charlatan who now calls himself Ibram X. Kendi, to claim that these things are not taught in schools when he himself has a children's book to teach critical race theory to young children.
I think it's astonishing that they're so ashamed by their CRT. You went to Harvard Law School. I went to Michigan. There were no crits at Michigan when I went. I believe the crits were in the saddle when you went to Harvard Law. Did you take any crits?
In some cases, I was forced to take professors who taught basic classes like tort law that subscribed to these doctrines. But no, of course, I did not take phony baloney courses like critical race theory.
It is astonishing to me that people deny that it exists. It's everywhere. Senator, I want to switch to you to a New York Times headline this morning. Afghan military pilots on the run feel abandoned by the United States. There are 143 Afghan pilots and crews detained by the Tajikistan authorities. They were trained by the United States Air Force. Are we going to get them out?
Well, Hugh, I'm not surprised that the New York Times is able to find Afghan pilots who feel betrayed by the United States government under Joe Biden, because they betrayed a lot of Americans. They betrayed many green card holders. So, of course, they would betray the Afghans whom we trained and who many times fought alongside us or fought our enemies in Afghanistan. And we should do what we can to help those who did so, if not get them to America, at least help get them out of the country and get safe harbor in third countries who are allies of ours.
Your staff was deeply involved, I think is still deeply involved, in helping American citizens and the SIV eligible get out of Afghanistan. Has the State Department stepped up their efforts, Senator?
I would not say so, Hugh. We worked overtime, you're correct, in August to help as many Americans and their families and green card holders and Afghans who are approved, embedded with special immigrant visas to escape the clutches of the Taliban. We worked with the Tajik government to provide safe harbor to those Afghan pilots who flew their aircraft into Tajikistan, thankfully, rather than let those aircraft fall in the hands of the Taliban. We continue to do what we can, in many cases working with private sector, wealthy and generous philanthropists, veterans organizations, all of whom continue to try to help get these Afghans out of Afghanistan. But the dominant mode of the Biden administration is a desire to turn the page and get it out of the news so they can focus on their reckless tax and spending bill. But this is the kind of moment, Hugh, that we saw in August when Joe Biden was humiliated by a ragtag, depraved gang of 7th century savages that the American people will never forget, even if it's not the front page news every day.
Last story, Senator. Adam Schiff has dropped a book. Ironically, it has come out at the same time John Durham has dropped an indictment on the Steele dossier. What do you think Adam Schiff ought to be asked? And by the way, what do you think of the indictment and what it tells us about the Steele dossier and all that went on throughout the entire Trump presidency of Russia, Russia, Russia. You're on Senate Intel. What did you make of that indictment?
Adam Schiff has a large and devoted following among the far-left cranks in CNN and MSNBC's viewership queue, so it wouldn't surprise me next week to see Adam Schiff's new book on the bestseller list for fiction queue, because that is what Adam Schiff has been spinning for years alongside everyone else in the mainstream media that contributed to the Russia collusion hoax. That indictment last week shows that the FBI and the Department of Justice didn't just know that Hillary Clinton had helped fund that fake dossier, but had actually been a critical source for it as well. It was nothing but a political dirty op, opposition research, which is often dropped in the media in the middle of campaign queue, that the FBI credulously adopted as a way to fan the flames of division and to validate Hillary Clinton's claim that somehow Russia was responsible for her defeat in 2016. I'm glad to see that Durham's investigation is proceeding. I suspect that won't be the last indictment in this matter.
Senator John Brennan, Jim Clapper, and James Comey attached the Steele dossier, I believe, to the first Intel report that the president-elect Trump received. Am I right about that?
It was either, if it wasn't officially included, it was provided to the president, at least in oral summary, Hugh.
Why would they do that? It's beyond me that they did that. I don't think enough attention has been focused on it. Before he became president, the information operation against him had already been launched.
Yeah, I think in part that they did it, Hugh, because they credulously accepted all of these reports, and they were driven by the Obama administration, some of whose officials are now back in the saddle, to include Joe Biden himself and Susan Rice in the White House and Samantha Power in the State Department. These are people who abused their powers in the final days of the Obama administration in an intentional effort to undermine the transfer of power to Donald Trump because they couldn't get over the election returns.
Yeah, I hope that the Senate Intel Committee, when it flips back to the control of Republicans, has those indicted by Mr. Durham, if they are successfully prosecuted by that point, to come in and talk about their motives, because it's a big story. Senator Tom Cotton, thank you so much for your time this morning. Senator, enjoy the week. The Browns won, the Cavs won, the Buckeyes won, and Republicans won, so everyone should be happy. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm coming back with Josh Kroshauer to talk about those elections. My Washington Post piece is over at thewashingtonpost.com and how Glenn Youngkin in Virginia can move quickly on education. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt, Monday Inside the Beltway. As I do every Monday, I close the show with Josh Kroshauer. He is with the National Journal. You can find him at Hotline Josh. Josh has really become one of the most objective and fair reporters in the media, left, right, and center. And he has been chronicling how badly the Democrats got beat like a drum last week. How bad was it, Josh?
Yeah, it was pretty bad, Hugh. You had two states who had the governor's races in Virginia and New Jersey. And those states sort of represented the new Democratic coalition in theory. They were blue, suburban, trending in a Democratic direction, anti-Trump, and Virginia elects by a pretty comfortable margin a Republican governor for the first time since 2009, statewide sweep. And, you know, Phil Murphy had the scare of his life in New Jersey, only winning by a couple points against a candidate that was under didn't have a lot of money, didn't have a lot of name ID, but came within a couple points of winning in a state that Trump lost by 16 points just last year. And then when you look at Nassau County in New York, a very blue county in Long Island, you flip in a lot of these local races, if you look at the intra-democratic struggles in blue cities across the country where moderates handily defeated much more progressive challengers, you see the writing on the wall. You see the Democratic Party struggling because they've pandered too much to the left, too much to the extremes within their own party, and they're having a reckoning right now.
Josh, I also note that in Virginia, the House of Delegates, which is the lower house of the two-house assembly, flipped from Democrat to Republican, at least 51 seats Republican. It's at least, a 7-seat pickup, and it might be more. That means Glenn Youngkin is not going to be bedeviled by a series of embarrassing bills. It means they're going to actually have to work with him What do you expect out of a Youngkin administration? What do you expect out of Youngkin?
It's a fascinating dynamic in Virginia because, as you note, Hugh, the Republicans took over the House of Delegates, so he has a majority to work with. And the Senate is evenly divided. And it's really interesting. There's a 51-49 Senate, and there's one Democratic senator in Northern Virginia who's kind of like a Joe Manchin of Democratic politics, very moderate, works with Republicans on a lot of things. So my read of things is that Glenn Youngkin has a real opportunity to get a lot of things done in a bipartisan fashion, get a lot of things done on education, where there is a backlash to some of the what I call educational extremism and taking place in the classroom and a whole host of measures. There's a lot of opportunity in the economy. He made a lot of promises about a grocery tax cut, other economic tax cuts. You know, he does have moderate Democrats that he can work with in a Democratic state Senate. The state Senate has always been a more moderate body than the state House. So he's got Republicans running the state House now, a moderate body that has under narrow Democratic majority. So there's a real opportunity to get a lot of things done in a moderate center-right fashion that could put him on the map, not just in Virginia, but beyond.
Now, to his south, Governor Bill Lee called in Larry Arnn of Hillsdale College, a friend of mine who's on the show every week, and asked him to help get the charter school movement in Tennessee off the ground, which they did. Glenn Youngkin campaigned on charter schools. He also campaigned on a new secretary of education, a new superintendent of education, something I wrote about in the Washington Post today. I think all eyes will be on Virginia to see how he implements public education reform, Josh. Are you an optimist that he'll get anything substantive done in the way that, say, Doug Ducey did in Arizona?
I do, because the education was the issue that won him the governorship, the backlash against some of the school closures, the curriculums, the gifted and talented, getting rid of gifted and talented programs. Look, he has a real opportunity, and I don't think it's going to be as simple as passing a law that bans critical race theory. I think it's going to be what you said, Hugh, promoting charter schools, school choice. The school choice movement is never been that strong in Virginia, but I think it's growing because of what happened over the last couple of years. And, you know, look, I think the standards. I mean, growing up in Northern Virginia, every Democrat ran on educational excellence. That was the slogan. And somehow it became educational equity. And that was essentially the mantra that he ran against in his gubernatorial campaign. And I think there's a real opportunity to appoint top good folks at the State Department of Education to promote legislation that would raise standards, that would raise excellence, as he said on the campaign trail. So
I talked to him.
An issue that crosses partisan lines. I think he has a real opportunity.
I talked to him on Thursday, and of course, he's not going to announce anything for a while, but he can announce a secretary of education and a superintendent. He gets to pick those, and then he has to pick a board of education. It rolls off very slowly, but those two are the big two. I wrote a column in the Post about it. And then last night I was thinking, go get Matt Continetti. Go get Mary Catherine Hamm. Go find a Bill Bennett for Virginia. Bill Bennett was 42 years old when Ronald Reagan named him the secretary of education, and all he did was open the windows and turn everything upside down. Do you think Youngkin should do the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, that is his issue. And I think he, like I said, he this wasn't just a partisan issue. He picked off independents by a large margin, and he even won the moderate Democrats in the suburbs on that issue alone, on the issue of education. So, look, the state of the education secretary, the bureaucracy, if you will, in Richmond set the tone, and the tone got set too far to the left over the last few years in Virginia. So just switching the leadership in place is going to be a big step for Youngkin. But I think he has a real opportunity to get some smart minds and across the ideological spectrum to, I think he even said on the campaign trail, he's going to have a task force of parents, teachers, administrators across the state to really focus on these issues and make it a priority.
It's interesting because it's adjacent to the Beltway, because part of Virginia is inside the Beltway. It has an outsized impact on the Beltway. Do you agree with that assessment, Josh? 30 seconds.
Absolutely. And look, it's a lot of those Loudoun County parents outside D.C. that really have shifted from Joe Biden to Glenn Youngkin. Those are the voters that he needs to keep in his pocket, in his corner for governor.
I think Glenn Youngkin becomes the most important Republican in the next 11 months. I really do, because they're in the minority everywhere, but they won in Virginia, and he's the face of Virginia, and it's covered by the national news media and the ruling class out of D.C. Josh Kroshauer, thank you. Hotline Josh on Twitter. Talk to you tomorrow, America.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn. deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.